to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return.
AV on the board. S&P futures, we'll get these in a second. I'm digging out all these labor numbers here. We got labor today. Labor numbers, jobs report. S&P futures down 1075, Dow futures down 89, NASDAQ futures down 26. So we're giving up a chunk of what we went up yesterday. We bounced back probably half yesterday and the day before. Now we're coming back the other way. We'll see, because I'm sure we'll move one way or the other when these numbers come out. But I'm getting my numbers here at the ready, as they say. Do we have Kevin? We don't seem to have Kevin yet, but I'm just going through the, don't forget last month was somewhat of an adjustment on the A1. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning.
We have, saying last month was somewhat of an adjustment, certainly in a household survey. And we'll see what happens today, because August is kind of a screwy month, so, we'll see what the September brings, because August has all the different adjustments for the amount of people that allegedly are leaving the workforce that are in just for the summer. And I think it's in the words of Carl, it's kind of a squirrely month. So we'll see what happens this particular month, because we had the half a million people pile in last month from the household survey, even though the headline number was not so good. So it's sort of difficult to look at. But, Kevin, what's your state of the world? How are you?
State of the world, well, first of all, it's manufacturing day, so, everybody should raise a glass to manufacturing sometime today. It's National Manufacturing Day.
We don't care about manufacturing anymore. We're a service industry, and as long as people are confident, as long as people are spending, even if it's on a credit card, we're okay.
In a service industry where I live, and we have... I don't know, hundreds of high school or 100 high school kids coming through today to learn all about manufacturing.
Good for you. Good for you. I had an interesting group of people last night I met with. And, of course, we were in the Harold Washington Library drinking tea. Maybe not exactly. And my buddy from the Fed was giving me some history of government and how the guy who changed government for the worst was a guy named Machiavelli. Remember that name?
Yeah.
And he claims we're at the end of the Machiavellian approach to government. And probably things are going to change, maybe violently. And we'll see what we end up with after that. Where the Greek and Roman tradition was that even though they had bad people, the tradition certainly in the Greek and the early Romans was government was a source of good. It was never about the power. And if you look at the history of early Rome, they probably had, what would you say, Kevin, 10, 11 dictators. They had the two consuls, right? But in times of stress, they would appoint a dictator. They felt it was more efficient. And the minute the stress period was over, the guy would say, see, I'm going back to my farm, and off he went. Because it had nothing to do, it was not about the power. It's the Greek tradition. Now, obviously, when Caesar and those guys got in, things changed a little bit. But he said Machiavelli was a guy who basically said, if you want goodness and light, go to church. That has no business of government. It's all about power. He says, today, you look what's happening. It's not about good government. It's about power. And it's the amazing craze for it, really, on both sides of the aisle. And the thing that is, one of the things that's concerning me, well, a lot of things concern me, but I listened to a Republican senator from, I think it was Pennsylvania, who was on CNBC yesterday, and he was spouting the party line, on the Republican side, about the unemployment rates here, and people are getting, for the first time in a while, people are getting pay increases, and people are spending, and the consumer's in the best shape they've ever been in, and all. You know what, Kevin, we've reached the point now, and I went through afterward and went through some numbers, that you can get out there and you can speak essentially the truth to where you can't really you can't really fight about any one of the numbers they're talking about. Yet the message is a flat-ass lie. And I don't, and once you get to that point, I don't know how you even talk to people. But what I'm saying is, when you have something that is, I'll say, underreported for so long, when the numbers I was given the other day, and I can still kind of remember them from the debt clock, where we have people's, by the way, I don't really think their numbers are correct, but the they had the people's median income in 2000 at 30,000, and now it's like 33.5. I think those numbers are, both of them are like 3,000 too low. Now every other source I have has the median income at like 36.5. But say, for instance, in a 20-year period, it's up maybe 10%. Yet, houses have gone from 165 to like 300 or 310, the median house, and the median car has gone from like 21 to 35 or something. So you're almost at a point where you can say, it's very similar to if stock in Kevin O'Neill Inc. goes from 100 to 5. And then the next day, I can't wait to gush all over the radio or TV. O'Neill Industries up 10%. It's up 50 cents, you idiot. Shut up. What's the difference? It was $100. Now it's 550 versus 5. I guess that's better. But so it's almost, Kevin, where if you start talking about people's wages going up, you know, say 2% for the first time or 3% for the first time in God knows how long, it almost doesn't matter. I mean, right now we need a jump of really, because if you look at the numbers, that, so let's call it 35,000. That 35,000, if it went up 20%, that would give you a $7,000 raise. Okay, if the price of the car or the house went up like 4%, it buries the 20% rise in the income, because it's been so low so long, you almost can't use the numbers. You know what I'm saying? Without lying, or without giving a bad impression. I mean, you understand what I'm talking about? I mean, it's,
yeah, I know what you're saying, and if you really want the all-time best examples of that, because I actually do this every week for a little thing I publish on ND Nation, just go through post-game notes in college football.
Oh yeah,
because that gives you the absurdity of going and cherry picking off different kinds of true but worthless statistics. So, for instance, last week, we learned that Penn State's won 14 straight games over teams within 250 miles of Penn State. Good.
It does what for you?
But it's absurd when we're talking about college football. It's absurd when we're talking about national politics too. But it's truly wrongheaded, because it's an intentional misleading. Well, it's an intentional, let's see, misleading is not the right word, kind of highlighting of true but meaningless facts for people.
Well, let's put it this way.
Maybe it's our foray into factoid world as passed off as serious political thought.
Well, but the thing of it is if nobody's had an increase for 10 years and all of a sudden this year people get a 4% increase, that's not a negative thing. I mean, it's a positive thing, but just like O'Neill Inc. going from 5 to 550 after it was 100. It's a positive thing, but it's a pimple on the ass of an elephant compared to what that number represents. I mean, it doesn't represent anything that person is in better shape vis-a-vis the things he's paying or what he's buying. I mean,
right, and I think you went through this on Wednesday with Russell. It's the whole picture. So, yeah, I want to know what the revenue side of your equation did, but I also want to know what the cost side of your equation did.
Right. I mean, what Carol keeps ranting even more and more about, because nobody's ever going to nobody's ever going to listen to anybody who's got the right numbers. I mean, people are here listening to him. I listen to him, but when you start getting to a point where the median income is 30, I'm going to say 36, not the 33 that's on that page. And the cost of a decent hospitalization for that family is 20. Kevin, that's so far afield of what the world's supposed to be. I mean, it shouldn't be, 60% of your income is your medical stuff, and that's not including the deductibles. We're not even on the, I mean, how much money, I mean, that's where all the money is in this economy.
Well, and that's what we pay out of pocket. Well, God, I wish I could cite it because I would share out the study, and I'm probably not going to have time because I do have to get over for to campus for manufacturing day festivities.
Well, but, because we're booting you 15 minutes early anyway.
There was a report I heard that was it was something like the taxes we on average that we pay, and again, it's a statistic. It should leave you asking more questions. Don't consider it the final answer, and also remember that averages are just that. Some are better and some are worse. But the average family was paying something like $3,000 more in taxes than essential living expenses.
Right.
And so not only are the essential living expenses out of control or at least ridiculously high, but we're taxing more. So now if the solution, say, for health care is various, what they call Medicare for All schemes that are not Medicare for All, if that's the solution, then we're just going to tax more. And does anybody think that it's going to, that we're going to be able to tax the government run is going to be cheaper than what we're doing now?
No, what it does is it shifts the whoever's ever in power shifts the burden of the cost to somebody else, but the cost remains the same. If you can't figure out a way to make it cheaper,
the cost theoretically remains the same, except that when the government gets involved, it tends to go up.
I don't know if the government really be that much worse than these insurance companies have become. They're so bloated; they might be of the government.
Well, if the strictly opinion. My opinion would be, oh, yeah, of course it can.
Do you think and I don't know the answer to this, but I'm saying...
Yeah, I have absolutely no faith in government's ability to deliver services.
Do you think the government could be any worse
than... It's pretty good at bombs, but that's
I know,
about
but,
it.
But do you think they'd be any worse than Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas? How could they possibly be more bloated?
Well, those are government, though, aren't they?
Well, I'm saying in the last month...
Essentially, aren't those government, though?
Yeah, well, it's true.
You know, if everything you do is regulated activity... that your revenue stream is tied to what you can lobby out of government, and you don't have any competition. Seems to me you are government.
Well, I tell you
we're just calling it something.
By the way, that is a very, I won't say democratic because I don't know what their policy is. That's a very non-republican. That's considered free enterprise if you listen to CNBC. That's capitalism.
Good thing I don't listen to CNBC.
But in the last month. The two things have happened on the healthcare side, and I don't know if you saw the news yesterday about Chicago. Well, there's all kinds of news about Chicago. One of the ones I managed to pick out, but in the last month, you know, I've reported. And I didn't write the stuff. People wrote good articles, and I just passed it on to you folks. If there were two ladies who did this article that I was last, you were on the show, Ken. Was it the last 7 years or the last 10 years? That even if you had a healthcare policy from a place, some PTI or from wherever, if you're getting it from the school, I hope you are, that you're out of pocket. This is if the company's buying you the policy. Your contribution and your deductible increase have not kept up. Your wage increases have not kept up with even that. And this is for somebody. This is the same month that the price for the company, this must be a median plan or something, has now blown through the $20,000 a year number. So what we're saying is, in addition to a company paying out of pocket $20,000 to get you or me or AV covered, okay, the increases where they've made you come up with, $200 a month or whatever, or deductibles now $3,000 instead of, $500 or something, those increases have not kept up with your paycheck in addition to them paying $20,000. That is unconscionable, Kevin. It is unconscionable that could be going on, and yet we were arguing about all this other stuff. We absolutely, neither party can deal with it because the power is in the hands of the insurance companies and the prescription drug companies.
Again, let's go back to the same model as we were talking about with public utility. Is insurance a regulated business? Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. When there were 250 more of them, I would say way less regulated. But now that there's there's allowed to be like four or five, I mean, Elizabeth Warren's correct in one way. If you're going to allow that to happen, you better lean on them. We've let it to happen, and we don't set any of the prices. At least,
well, and yes, and we have allowed states to essentially put barriers to entry up such that there are a series of monopolies. Some states are way more competitive than others,
correct,
and it shows in their rates. But
correct.
But some states only have one or two providers that they sanction to do business in their state, and we invoke the Commerce Clause for all kinds of things. We in fact invoke the Commerce Clause as justification for taxing people in Obamacare, and at the same time we can't turn around and say, well, we'll let people buy their health insurance from any company anywhere in the country.
Well, you see,
you can do it with your automobile insurance, but you can't do it with your health insurance.
Well, first of all, they don't want to do it, okay, because they will tell you they don't have their network in another state. Okay.
Yeah. But tough luck. Then make that a factor in your buying decision.
Well, what I'm saying is what you saw happen in that area was a way to make the people more competitive. And look where that turned. Instead of looking at somebody's face, you're looking at their ass.
Yes, except that it wasn't a way to make people more competitive, and there were lots of people. I was one of them, but I'm not patting myself on the back because this is not, it was real common. There were lots of people that predicted exactly what did happen, predicted it, and said, if you do this, here's what's going to happen. Deductibles will go up, premiums will go up. All of that stuff about you're going to save $2,500 a year was just not true.
Oh, okay, but right, and I'll go back to, there was something.
No, it didn't make it more competitive. It made it less competitive.
I'm saying the original idea of having these things only state by state was that there was enough in every individual state where you had Blue Cross of Illinois and you had Blue Cross of Indiana. They didn't want Blue Cross being all 50 states. They didn't want what essentially has happened. I'm talking about 40 years ago when it was set up this way. Maybe 50 years ago. So there actually were like 250 combinations in the two or three years before the start of Obamacare that really is what sunk Obamacare. You went from, I think, Nevada went from 9 down to like 2. Then who are the guys that ended up buying like 15 or 20 of the month of the, what's the name of the company that owns like 15 or 20 of the state of individual states, Blue Cross, which essentially blew past the part where it was going to be a Blue Cross in every state. Well, now it isn't, because there's one company who's like the Blue Cross of 20 states or something. So what exactly was not allowed to happen was allowed to happen. It's sort of like breaking up all the baby bells and have them all get back together again. Very similar.
Well, and the combinations were allowed to happen, to continue to happen after Obamacare, because the markets the exchanges would have, and in some cases did, collapse under the, under their own weight, so they needed people to come in and bail them out.
Well, you really don't need an exchange, Kevin, if you have two people delivering orders to the floor. And you wonder how much money these people make? The guy from Citadel is now going to have his name on the Museum of Science and Industry. The guy makes like $1 million a day because nobody else can be in the market. He gets preferred feeds, and nobody cares. He's providing order flow. There's probably two or three people that do all the stuff that thousands of people used to do. And do they do a better job? I don't know. Or not. But they got enough preferences where you can't compete against them. Anybody who makes that kind of money, I mean, it's like the head of Camelot Edison, I don't know what he makes. If he made like $80 million a year, he'd go, wait a minute. What does the guy do? If he wasn't even there, what difference would it make, right?
I mean, yeah, well, and if you don't have competition, then, what are you relying on to be successful?
I would say that if you look at one way of finding out if an industry is competitive, is look at how much the CEO makes. I mean, you don't have to look at Kevin and Chief's food store when we're competing with, 20 other food stores. And there's still some competition in that area, although Walmart's trying their best to not be, but there still is.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. But I mean, you're not going to see us making $40 million a year, because if we are, the place can't support it, right? You know, or you don't have to worry about the local guy who opens a local saloon making, dragging $1 million a year out of the place. That's a lot of beers. Nobody's going to go in there. But, you know, I guess what I'm saying is that these numbers, all this stuff lands. If we don't figure out a way, like Carl says, to get healthcare down from, I'm not talking about being worse for anybody. I'm just saying if we can't figure out a way to get the cost from 20% of GDP down to 15 or 16 in the next 10 years, we got to, I think we don't survive, Kevin. I honestly don't, money-wise. I mean, that much money can't
We'll be grace.
Well, but you walk, all you have to do is walk into one of these new hospitals.
And yet we're not in an economic union that will come and just bail us out, even though they threaten not to.
Anybody, I think, who has any sense of economics, in any sense, if you walk into I'll use a saloon. You walk into a saloon, and there's this massive marble thing with everything on earth, and it's absolutely stone cold gorgeous with all this art on the wall and everything. And you walk through that for 50 yards before you get to a 8-stool bar. The first thing you're going to ask yourself is, wait a minute. I have to walk through all this incredible expense they just spent before I can even sit down and order a beer. How's this place going to make enough money to pay for that? You walk into a hospital, all these new massive buildings, how far do you have to go before you find a patient room, for God's sake, or an operating room?
Yeah. No, and I agree, and I think your tavern example is perfect, because I can recall a situation just like that where they built this beautiful place. They sunk a lot of money into it, and they had a good wait staff, and the food was pretty good. The beer selection, was great, and yet they didn't last 5-6 months because they never could. They spent all their capital on the place more than was necessary, and then on top of it they couldn't cover the fixed cost of it, and so they choked and died, which was really a shame. But so how much money must you have if you don't choke on that? And I think that's your point.
Yeah.
It's too competitive. They couldn't charge enough to recover what they had spent on the
if you're in a situation
on the premises.
If you're in a situation where, when I was in University of Chicago grad school, they were the only at the time they were the only school that had a master's in a hospitalization degree, and at the time there was only one school that had a master's in hospitality degree. Guess where that was, Kevin? You know the answer to this.
It was Columbia, wasn't it?
No, it was University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
But now all kinds of people do. And obviously a lot of people...
I vaguely remember Columbia having hotel motel management or something like that.
Probably. Maybe it was just a man. Maybe it was a master. Whatever. Anyway. But this guy, he said, this is after you're learning all this cost accounting and all this cost and how you do this and, accrual and cash and all. And he says, guess how hospitals decide how much, what their costs are per day, per patient day. And everybody goes, we have this, the nurse. No. They don't do any of that. They take the entire amount of money they spent for the year and divided it by the amount of patient days. And that was their cost. It had nothing to do with how much it actually cost to put that patient there for the night.
There were no unit costs, no marginal cost thinking,
none of that. So basically what we're talking about is if they have to pay somebody $100,000 a year to keep the fish and the plants going in the big area that nobody's even in, that's all become part of the cost. Now you're sitting there going, your night, Mr. O'Neill, costs $10,000, and you go, wait a minute, there's one nurse for three people, and she's making $500, maybe $400, probably. Well, that's $133. The room, even if it's the best hotel, let's say it's $500. How you getting the $10,000? Where are you going with this? Well, we got the cost of the atrium. I'm not in the atrium. it's an amazingly messed up cost system, Kevin. And when you start putting three or four insurance companies on top of it, and every piece of paper has to go back and forth 100 times, what you're saying, you got a problem. right? And we're all paying for it.
And then you get government regulating it and thinking yeah. they should have a say in how it works, and all they understand is cash.
Right, oh yeah.
So, you know, the idea that a capital expenditure might have long-term repercussions.
All right, hold that thought, bud.
It lasts a year.
S&P futures down 1175, Dow futures down 85. We'll be right back. We should have these employment numbers up for another hour, Kevin. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Hey, I got to ask you guys, Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam invokes emergency powers announces face mask ban. What in God's name does that do? Does anybody have any idea? Kevin, AV?
I think it means no baseball, because if the catchers can't wear face masks, it's going to be a bad game.
Yeah, that could be it. What are people trying to disguise themselves? Is that the idea?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, God. All cameras in the world, I guess probably not a bad idea. SP Futures down 11.50, NASDAQ Futures down 24.50, Dow Futures down 82. Around the rest of the world, we've got DAX down 5, call that flat. FTSE up 22.3%, CAC up 6, call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 68.3%, Shanghai down 26. Actually, I think those guys have been closed. Hang Seng down 289, 1.1%. We've got bonds at 1.53. They're heading down. We'll see if they go below 1.5 after this employment report. We got the Bund down minus 0.58. We got Japan back down again to minus 0.21. They had made it back to almost minus 0.15 and are dipping more negative again. We've got oil up 7 cents. Call it 52. It was 58 not that long ago when we had the problem over in Saudi Arabia. Brent 58.05. And we've got natural gas, 231. I'm itching to buy some of that stuff. I have not done it. Don't do it. But because it's a massive contract and blah, blah, blah. If you don't know what you're doing, you really get caught there. But anyway, I think it's low there. RBOB 156. We've got gold is up $1.20, 15.15, so well over 1500 again. Silver, 17.63. It's down 4 cents. Copper cannot get out of its own way. 254, down another penny today. AV, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Good morning. 6:37 a.m. in Chicago. Happy Friday, everyone. It is cloudy day in Chicago today with 49 degree currently. Feeling like 45 with high humidity. No rain expected. The highest of the day will be 58 and the lowest 51. And it is 71 degrees Fahrenheit currently in Phoenix. Sunny and clear sky this Friday with a high is 95, low is 69. The traffic volume looks pretty clear at this moment. No accidents reported. But be ready for some slight delays on Stevenson Expressway going north and 90 Expressway eastbound in the northwest suburbs. However, Lakeshore Drive looks clear. In sports, we have Cardinals beat Braves 7-6, and Dodgers beat Nationals 6-0.
What do you think, Kevin? You like the idea that the national the Cardinals look like they're still strong here?
I have relatives in St. Louis who are big Cardinals fans, and I love them to death, but I can't stand their team.
Well, you do have to say that if there is in this country over the last however many years in any sport, it has to be the most successful mid-market, small-market team anywhere. Maybe Green Bay would be the only other example that I can think of. Wouldn't you say over like a long period of time, like a half a century, or maybe
yeah.
even more than that? And they have
not only do they are they smart about their the talent that they acquire, but they manage to get people who want to stick around.
And they, to a certain extent, they weren't as smart as the Cubs were. Of course, now that the Cubs are going away from that, when the Cubs were really the only, they were the first superstation, and they played day baseball, and all of course they did was whine about. How much they were getting screwed by playing day baseball. But the fact is, countrywide, if somebody piled into a restaurant or a saloon in Oklahoma at 2 p.m, you were watching the Cubs. There was nobody else on. So there was a real strength to that. I'm not saying they should go back to that, but I'm saying.
Oh no, they built a whole fan base around being the only show on in the afternoon, unless you wanted to watch soap operas.
Right, And I'm going to say that for those that don't know a whole lot about radio, is that there are 10 stations in the country they're not really super stations, but they're 50,000 watt, and everybody else has to essentially back off. They have pretty much a circular signal, which most radio stations do not. They have to point in different directions. And one of those stations is in St. Louis. And the Cardinals were on that station. Were at night.
KMOX.
Yeah, when they were at night, you could clearly hear the Cardinals for 400 miles in every direction, Kevin, 350. And amazing.
That was part of it, but the other part of it is that they were pioneers in putting together the syndications that, you know, like if you go look up Cubs Radio, you'll see that they are on radio stations all over the Midwest and even in other parts of the country. Because people buy the broadcast rights and show them on their own stations. St. Louis was the pioneer in doing that. So they were the team that was the westernmost team in the United States, and as a result, they were able to put together this whole west and south radio network that built their fan base incredibly when there was no baseball in those areas.
Well, you had before, the way it works now, and I don't know how it works for sports broadcasts, but I suspect it works somewhat the same as it does if Stocks and Jocks were, say, on satellite. But before there were satellites, and again, I'm not the engineer, but I know a little bit about this, when the Cubs used to go on, like when Lou Boudreau and those guys were still doing the show, and they'd say on Sunday, for like a couple of years, Kevin, didn't they try out like 7 or 8 games or then maybe 10 games the next year where they went on the Continental Broadcasting Network and they got picked up by all these other stations?
Mm-hmm.
I think that they actually had to run phone lines maybe to Omaha or someplace. It's where a lot of your trunk phone lines are all connected into Omaha. I did some work out there on that when I first got out of school. And maybe distributed out of there or did something. But essentially, you got from station to station on phone lines. Okay, and I'm guessing the Cardinals would have had to have done the same thing. They would have had to have gone from, they would have had to have, I don't know how many different phone lines coming out of their place to every station that was going there. They probably had, Telos boxes and ISDN lines were like we still have here, we don't use anymore.
I don't think they had to have one-on-one. I think they just had to make it to a point of presence, a.k.a. a pop, and then it would be distributed.
Well, what I'm saying, those pops,
maybe not in the earliest times,
in those days,
but that was basically how it worked.
But you had something called what were they? The watch lines, where you could buy the entire line for the month. Long distance line. All your big firms had watch lines. Allied.
Yeah, essentially, it's not radically different in concept from what we have today, where you're buying bandwidth. It's just that, we have not just satellite, but we have all of the fiber that's running all over the country.
This is before fiber.
Just gives you ability to do high bandwidth, high fidelity, types of, not just radio broadcasts, but TV broadcasts as well.
This is a little bit of ancient history, but back, I'm going to say, when I first got out of school, say 1976. Just picked up your phone and dialed New York, hello, New York, like in the old TV shows. If you got a 5-minute phone conversation, I'm going to say, Kevin, it was $10.
Oh, yeah, it was really expensive.
It was really expensive.
It was expensive well into the 70s.
But if you bought this watch line, inbound or outbound, Allied van lines, because they had, trucks all over the damn country and agencies, they had some incredible number, like 35 outbound and 45 inbound watts. And I think they were right up there. By far the biggest number of watts lines, I bet you can guess. Guess who? By far the biggest phone bill and the biggest number of watts lines.
I don't know. Probably the Board of Trade.
Merrill Lynch.
Oh, Merrill Lynch. Okay, that's believable.
And so...
What's watts stand for?
That I should know, but I don't. But you essentially bought the whole line for the month.
Yeah, wide area telephone service.
Yeah,
and you would buy it in bands. So you could buy a band that covered only within 100 miles of where you were, and then
right.
you'd buy another band that went 500 miles. So how far you had to go factored into your cost.
And then people would do that essentially by hand, trying to figure out how many you needed and go through the. But where you put all these places, your central thing was in Omaha because they had a huge massive phone lines there anyway because it was a Strategic Air Command base, so they were loaded. But along this one road, because I went out there to check it out when I was at Allied, there had to be 30 of these little, they looked like pillboxes, Kevin. And the only thing coming out of the front, you didn't see a machine gun, but they were these concrete bunkers. And if you walk inside any one of them, it was just a massive row of switching equipment. Because if you started in the middle of the country, you were a little cheaper. So actually to go from Chicago to Omaha and then spit out from Omaha was cheaper than just spitting out from Chicago. Anyway, but I'm saying that was a lot of money in those days. So now you just bounce off the satellite. So if the station in St. Louis, matter of fact, they're not on that station anymore, you don't necessarily need it because you go up to the satellite and anybody who wants to can pick you up.
Yep.
So it's a hell of a lot easier. All right, Kevin, we don't have that much time because we know you got a dash early and Farley wants to come in a little early this morning. What do you make of this employment number? All of a sudden, all these numbers are bad numbers, not good news anymore, and we're slipping.
Well, I do think, you know, I always stress the notion of microeconomies anyway. So you have to look at how it's doing in specific areas, and that's, you know, you need to sit down with the BLS report and do that because they do break it out in all the different areas. So I'm always interested in who's doing well and who's not. And also the only other thing I'll say in defense of any numbers and what we're, you know, if we're going to crow about something or we're going to complain about something, is I'm assuming that there's a certain consistency of measurement from, you know, over the years, that even if it's wrong, that it's at least consistent, so that, as you know, we should be able to get some inference from year over year. And Carl's always big on that. Look at last year, don't look at last month. So we should, you know, we should get some feeling about it, but otherwise, what do I think of the employment numbers? Not much.
Well, I mean, they're all, at a month-to-month basis, there's always this, I mean, tremendous skew between the reestablishment survey and a household survey, which is a mess to start with. And then we start talking about the adjustments on top of it. I mean, I think Carl's right, but all right, Kevin, have a good day, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Are you taking the 45 in Bowling Green tomorrow or what?
I'll probably be taking the nap.
Oh, God. So what do I got to do? I just got to drive across the border, ask AV to get the app from the casino in Hammond. And so all I got to do is drive across the border 5 feet, and allegedly my phone will let me put the bet down because now I'm in Indiana, right? Isn't that
the deal? Yeah, because now Indiana has betting, it's tied in with a Chicago company, like Rush Street Nights or something like that.
You imagine
that is what it's called. That's one of them. So one of the national ones that you've heard all about is in, and they have a deal. But the Chicago one is tied in with the French Lick Casino for licensing purposes.
Oh God! All right, buddy. Have a nice day. Have fun with your 100 students. S&P futures now only down 9.25. NASDAQ futures down 17. We come back with Mr. Farley Harmsey.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, on Wolfpack Stocks and Jocks, Dr. Mouse, she's AV on the board. S&P futures down 8.75. They were down 12. NASDAQ futures down 16.75. But these will all be they'll be blasting one way or the other as soon as this another labor report comes out at 7:30 Central Daylight Time.
Correct.
Fari, how are you?
I'm excellent, sir. Now that we saw what we begin to see, what we talked about a couple of years ago, which is dominoes. Dominoes are beginning to fall.
Yes,
so the question now is, go figure out on the IEM, electronic markets or others, see what the betting line is on how long Pompeo will be Secretary of State. Because these dominoes are falling like flies. And this is what happens when you have a dictator running the show in a developed country which has had a history of democracy. You just can't run it like this. So
no, it's
there's a price to pay.
It's
and all of the Senate Republicans who stayed with this guy, all these guys are complicit in this activity. So.
Hey, I got a question.
There's a price to pay. Remember what happened with the peanut farmer?
Yeah.
You know the price we paid? We lost Iran. We lost the Middle East because of the stupidity of the nervousness of Nixon. He won 40. Had he known he would win with 49 states, he wouldn't need to even cover. He wasn't involved with Watergate, but he was involved in the cover-up.
Yeah.
That stupid little mistake, strong discontinuity to the left, to the extent that, we lost Iran, we lost the, Middle East. And Charlotte said that. He says, when I go, Iran goes. When Iran goes, Middle East will go.
Well, and look what happened. As bad as he was, when we got rid of the guy in Iran, same thing.
Well, you should see the thing.
I'm involved on
Facebook with a bunch of my dad's friends from the Imperial Iranian Air Force. They post stuff from Iran through friends and connections and proxy servers. You should see what people are saying in Iran. They call him the Shah, our father. Then why did you go? So
hey,
a little bit too late. Some of those guys were the ones who were on the street saying down with the Shah or down with the U.S. Now they're eating their own blank.
Yeah, hey, Farr, I got a question for you. This,
yes, sir.
We were going to talk about the tariffs with China and how much, I think it's really hard to hurt the economy. It was certainly hurting China, and I think it's hurting us as well.
That was a status in the back. Sorry. This is Cape Naples. We're going through a pre-launch sequence.
What did we, all of a sudden now we've got this thing going on with Europe where not very many tariffs, although there still are some.
Oh, Murray, hitting my French wine and Brie, and what is going on? And my Jaguar? I mean, come on.
Well, that's right. Well, no, the Jaguars not yet. Not
well, that's, we'll see. Depends on if Boris Johnson loses, which we think he does, this is a different ballgame.
All right, so
remember, these are fair weather friends with, look, Trump considers everybody, including his son, as a fair weather friend. If things are good, you're in my circle. If one thing moves, you out.
Well, we've got this court, though. All right, so.
Right.
I mean, the court has decided that
the WTO, you mean?
Yeah.
Or
whatever kangaroo
or
whatever
the EU court.
The WTO court, whatever. So they say because we've finally won our quote case that the Airbus is being helped by the EU, which duh.
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
So we get to put tariffs on Europe. Now, why that has anything to do with
I'm sorry, we do what? I'm sorry?
We are now allowed to put tariffs on stuff coming out of Europe, which has nothing to do with Airbus. What French wine and brie cheese has to do with Airbus, I have no idea. But we get to put tariffs on that. So I'm walking through the logic here, and I can't find any.
I haven't found anything on that.
Well, of course,
I didn't know that.
But now in another month or two,
right,
there's going to be a similar ruling on whether we've helped Boeing a real lot, which, of course, we have.
Well, that's what bank is a bill for Boeing, yes.
So okay, but now we sneak into Boeing maybe through the military side. But do we help Boeing? Yeah.
No, but think about the commercial side. On the commercial side, Import Export Bank, basically, their business is to help finance exports. But what's the big ticket item in financing? It's Boeing airplanes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, my point is, now, if we lose there, in whatever court this is, now Europe is going to be able, according to this judiciary, whoever the hell they are, to put tariffs on our stuff. How exactly do both sides now get to lob?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
Things having nothing to do with Boeing or Airbus,
as heavy as they do, especially the labor side. On the, I know, but I mean, I know the Airbus intimately because of my work on 747, our biggest competitor at the time. Not as big as they are now, but especially on the French side and German side, the amount of the subsidy from the government is criminal almost. It almost forces you to be fat and happy and don't work. You'll be lazy. This is subsidy has done. And we still, thank God to the ingenuity of Boeing, they competed. And up to very, very recently, Airbus was just approaching, but never got there. Recently, I think they may have even overtaken Boeing. So we got to do something.
Well, I mean, there's only two manufacturers. So,
correct.
I mean,
of that class.
Yeah.
Of aircraft,
well,
right?
you can.
There's some in Canada or some in Brazil, but nothing like the big luxurious jumbos.
Well, I mean, the Bombardier does the smaller ones.
Pardon me?
Bombardier does DC-9.
You got it in Europe, you got it in Canada, you also got it, like, I think, Brazil. So.
But, there's two. Now, you can't tell me, I mean, I hope I'm not enough of a fool that when this 737 thing starts with the fiasco with the MAX, out of the blue comes this $14 billion program to give Boeing that kind of money to redo the B-52s. How many B-52s we got left? 50? Maybe?
I don't know, but here's the problem. The B-52s, well, they're just trying to do, listen, they're trying, if they really want to do B-52s correctly, they have to change the engines. There's still a gas guzzler, but the avionics are already updated. They may need some more updating, but you can't change the body. It still is a big, big, huge radar signature, so it's not a stealth. But it's long range, and is a heavy heavy transfer of weapons, you know. It's a heavy, he has a huge payload. But the life of those is, I think, approaching twice the average life of the pilots.
Well, but
the life of the aircraft.
But what hasn't been changed in there? Probably every piece of metal in the frame.
The biggest problem we have is fatigue. That you can change a lot of things, but you can't change the bulkheads that easily. And that's where the fatigues come, like wing box and all that, all the takeoffs and landings, all the pressurization in the cabin and so forth. Over long, they'll show up. Aluminum has fatigue. It's just part of the power. Why do you think they stopped F-14s? I don't know how many we had, 360, something like that. They're all leveled. They cut them up because they didn't want to get the spare parts to Iran either, because they would think there would be a big black market for spare parts for Iran.
Well, I also think
that's
always
another country it was exported to.
I think they cut them up because they always want to buy new also, Fari. I mean,
well, Hold on. I agree, but it's new capabilities, new avionics. We want to be stealth F-14, but also you have, that's the, if you look at this flight envelope going to Mach 3 aircraft, it's not a joke. I'm very close to Mach 3 aircraft. The pressure on those are amazing. By the way, I've been reading about hypersonics.
We gotta go to break here, and then we come back. Let's talk more about these tariffs are sinking. Why do people think it's any different than the Smoot-Hawley tariffs that threw us into the Great Depression or helped out? We're going on the same road. Are they doing it on purpose?
Tariffs never work.
S&P futures down 10.25, NASDAQ futures down 19. Waiting for the labor numbers. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Okay, guys,
this
I'm
self-directed
back here.
Trading is a lonely like job. Yes, online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Safari Hamzy. She's AV on the board. SP Futures out down 10 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures down 19.50. Farah, do you think...
Yes, sir.
Our guys, I don't even with the Trumpkin in there, I don't... Our guys can't be that stupid to actually think that
really?
this tariff...
Did you ask them where they go to school?
Well, I mean, but this tariff thing is actually a source of income that's actually a good one. Now, if the thing goes the other way on Boeing, then they got to put tariffs on our stuff. Do both governments actually think that this is just yet another tax where it acts like they're fighting each other and they're doing good stuff for us? And in fact, all they're doing is taxing us.
Yeah. Well, wait a second. Let me make a comment there for the Crumkins. He said, if we tax them, they're going to pay. Right?
Yeah.
So, if we tariff Airbus, we're not going to pay, right? I mean, that's what the president said. I heard it myself on Fox.
Well, Delta Airlines is going to pay. Anybody who buys an Airbus.
He says, we're not going to pay. They're going to pay. China is going to pay. Right, sure. Okay, hello.
Well, I mean...
Listen, this whole thing, Peter Navarro used to be in Channel 22, okay, in L.A., that was the precursor CNBC, all right? I think Dr. J came in town. I took him there for an interview, because, yeah, we would take all of our speakers over to Channel 22. As an example. Anyhow, this guy, nobody gave a hoot what he was talking about. I think he had a spot one afternoon, 15-minute interview once a week. He might have even paid for it to be on the air, okay, with them. But that was a business show, again, precursor to CNBC back in the late 80s and 90s. Now, this guy is the head of the Trade War Commission right now,
yeah,
if you want to call it that.
Scary.
Okay? We're going the wrong road. This is not going to be good. You know why? We don't have the stomach. We don't want to be inconvenient that long. I understand what Trump is doing. I understand what he's trying to accomplish. What he's trying to do is very, very, with China, very, very painful. Did you see the DF, the parade on the Monday, right? Did you see their, I posted on Facebook. I believe it's DF-21. Let me make sure that we got this thing right. Hold on. I believe did you see the DF-21s on the parade?
What are those?
I'm sorry, DF-17s. These are carrier killers, hypersonic missiles.
Okay.
They will at the impact time, the speed is about one and a half.
Wow.
That means you won't even hear it on the impact time. It's about 400. It doesn't have a warhead. It doesn't need to. It's ceramic and composite skin, but it's coming in at such a speed. And also, it comes to you straight down from like 100,000 feet. And running at Mach 1.5 to let's say Mach 2.5, it's a few seconds. Finito. You can't even see it that comes out. That's what they've built. Where do you think they got it from? They stole a lot of technology from us. And they're smart people, don't get me wrong. Listen, they're producing more engineers than we've ever done. Boom, boom, boom. Plus, Popular is run by engineers. And some of them are even educated here.
Well,
and they have no elections.
Yeah, they're all educated here.
Pardon me?
They're educated here because they pay more.
Yeah, well, not to pay more. Well, they're smart enough to go to engineering schools to begin with. I mean, I had Chinese kids in school, both in high school and college. These guys are smart guys. And Northrop, too. Listen, at Northrop, we did an EEO. EEO came in, Employment Opportunity came in and said, hey, all the people have to come in and submit their ratings for their people. And at a very, very short, small management level, so that there's no, we aggregated, you send us, his department and coming in at a, you know, fairly low level of middle management, and not higher up. They didn't want higher up to paint it a glossy picture. Give us detailed data, we do the aggregation, okay? Guess who was ranked the best in terms of most progress, not in management, but progress up to management, because there's a glass ceiling there you can't get through. If you're not a white, fair-headed boy, you're going to, not in the military-industrial complex, you're not going to go through that glass ceiling. But into the rise up to that level, Asians were first. Then there were whites. Then were blacks and there was Hispanics at the end. And the resultant was, you got to do something about this. There's got to be some disparity. Point is, you can't. All people are not created equal. One man, one vote, but your IQ is not equal. Somebody's smarter. Listen, you're smarter than me. I can't change that. You're smart. I'm not. Simple. Hello.
Well, the...
So anyhow, the aggregate, the Chinese were very involved. Actually, we had a bunch of them on their black projects. But I'm not saying they sent anything out. It's just that these guys get in, they hack, they buy. You know, what, we lost one engineer. He was living in a $5 million... He quits Northrop. A month later, they're still tracking him because he was on a black project. He was in a $5 million home in Maui. Now, how did you save enough money to buy a $5 million home in Maui on an engineering salary? So, he was selling secrets on B2. So, none of these guys... Listen, we got to watch. Look what Xi said. We will have a military that nobody can challenge. And with this type of missile, actually, it'll challenge freedom of seas, freedom of navigation of seas, which we do a lot in that area, Taiwan Strait. It will basically make, let me read to you, retired Admiral William McCraven, this is the guy who got, former head of the Special Forces, you know, the JSOCs. He's the guy who got Osama. Called the Chinese intensifying military build-up a holy shit moment for the United States.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's, we got to watch this. This is coming from China stealing our secrets.
Well,
I understand what Trump is doing.
Yeah,
I understand the goal. I don't agree with the means. Because, he's shooting himself in the foot. He's doing something to the economy. That's what we want to talk about. Look what happened with non-farm is coming up. I realize that. But look at what ADP missed. Look at ISM.
Yeah.
Look at manufacturing. We're ISM. I think we're below 2000, June 2009. That was already in the toilet anyway. We're below that. This is the guy who's going to fix the economy. This is the guy who's going to save the Rust Belt. He just shot himself in the foot.
Oh yeah.
My source of that, Navarro.
Well, we have, I have a reasonable...
I rest my case, Your Honor.
But I have you just talked about the education. I know of a person, I'm sure there's more than one, that tried to get into the University of Illinois in one of the advanced, you know, graduate physics or chemistry or whatever it was. And, the kid had, you know, pretty much straight A's at the same school and was basically got flushed out of the, we don't want you in the grad program because I think it's loaded with Asians that are paying more. I don't discriminate against anybody, but when you start discriminating because they pay more, that's a different. But at the same time, we're bitching at them. I mean, like, what are we doing here?
And certain market doesn't stay with the housing. They, you know, I mean, I know one case. You know, my roommate went out to the daughter of Imelda and what was his first name? It's Marcus. Daddy came home and came to Princeton, bought a $5 million mansion. In back of those days, with securities and all that, I mean, gated a piece of land, I think 2 acres. 2 acres in Princeton is not easy to get. $5 million for one girl. Why? Oh, she didn't want to live in the dorm.
Why?
And then you approach the place, they would jump out of the bushes with submachine guns.
That's wild.
I went there one time and I told her, I said, Maria, I'm not coming there anymore. You want to come and hang out with us, you come to us. We're not coming to you. That's all ridiculous. Right. So, but that's what they do. Look what they think to them. New York market.
I can only imagine.
All these rich kids coming in. They have their own condos.
I can only imagine.
Some of them probably bought from daddy's money that was given to Grumpino.
I can only imagine the guy with the machine gun eyeballing you up and down.
Listen, I went out with a girl from Colombia, and she was her father was in minerals.
I know.
Leah Romano.
I'm sure the old man...
That was our first rule on the first date. Bodyguards show up. I said, what the hell is this?
Who's this guy?
My daddy wants me to have bodyguards. Always do.
Are you guys in drugs?
She goes, no, we're mining, but my dad is a buddy with the prime minister. We need to have protection. Don't worry. They won't do anything. Just sit there.
Yeah.
I said, either I go or they go. What do you want?
Well, she said
you think I can take care of you?
All right, so these numbers are getting lower.
Yes.
What if we?
On a notice, by the way, you get the results. Let's do a plug here. PMT. You didn't say attaboy. We went short last Wednesday. Remember when the NASDAQ went up 100 points? NASDAQ went up 100 points on Wednesday. We said, we got to sell this market. Thursday was quiet. Friday, a little crack.
Speaking of crack, there's a big crack out in the street. Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, we're at
2840 on SPX. That's a 200 day. We're not, the big guns, we're so close to it, and we've gone so near it, I don't think any of the big guns are going to commit any size money here. Because before that, there was a double top near the all-time high at 3028, okay? This is all cash. That's SPX. We're not going to go anywhere until 2840, let's say, 2839. We lost.
Well, we got you. We have to get him back, AV, somehow. We're only 716. We're working on these numbers here. SP futures still down 1075. NASDAQ futures down 21. Hopefully we'll get Fari back here in a second. But, all of a sudden everybody's looking at these numbers like, and by the way, this morning, Hewlett Packard announced they're laying off 16% of their workforce, or 16,000 people or some number. And they're also gonna get back, WeWork is gonna lay off thousands of people too. So, we're starting to see some people are laying people off, which is obviously not good. And even though we claim we don't care about these manufacturing numbers, I mean, the fact is we do. Because the service industry has to service something, and we're still making some stuff, and, even though the service industry is quote more important, I mean,
Hi there, I'm back on.
Yeah, we got you.
What were we talking about? Did you hear me about the 200 day?
Yeah.
2839?
Yeah, and I mentioned about this morning, I don't know if you saw the Hewlett Packard and WeWork announced how many people are going to lay off.
Yes.
We're starting to see. Yeah.
David, are you here?
I'm here.
Yeah, we also have David.
David. Hi, David. How are you?
Everybody's here.
I'm good. You? I'm making a few shekels here and there, you know. But Sabbath is coming, so I'll close early.
What did you make of What did you make of that 50-point turnaround yesterday? It came kind of out of nowhere, although we're still
50-point in what? S&Ps?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't 50 points in S&Ps.
Well, we were at 35-40. We flipped.
Hold on. But close. That was a huge, well, because the sell-off was so strong, but I think that was a trading issue. It doesn't change fundamentally where we're heading. This economy is slowly taking down. Some of it has nothing to do with Trump, by the way, okay? With 12 years of the cycle. It's just saying like, Obama was great. He raised the stock market so much. Wait a second. We're in the toilet when Bush left. So, it's easy. These are the cycles we're in. And, when you get pushed down that far, especially as we know, markets overshoot. They're emotional, not necessarily logical. There's a buying opportunity. There was a buying opportunity there. But it's the beginning of a leg. Look at the chart. You've stepped back. Look at the weekly chart, okay? Weekly chart of S&P. And you'd see that, I'm going there right now. We're beginning to get a formation together like we had in, let's say, possibly, late October, okay, of last year. Late October, not early October. Yeah, not early because that was the top. That was the high. But after that, we had a couple of tests, and then So we got to have some retest failures to the high side, and that's the big guns we start having short. Now, the one other item I would urge everybody to look at is the death cross. That's the 50-bar over 200-bar cross. They're all coming up. And what's leading it is Russell and transportation. That's always I found at the table. Watch what transportation does. That's a discounted expectation of the market. Of the overall market, because now we transport everything. We're global. Air transportation is a component of everything, just like energy is. Now we do not build local. We build organized and industrialized, and we ship. So transportation is key. Look what it's done. It's beginning to crack at the support level at, let me give you a level there. I would watch 20 to 9700 area on transportation index. It closed at 99.25, actually up 0.5%. But the action, the chart pattern is dramatic. Then you go to Russell, that risk on, risk off. The level I would watch there is about 1458 area. Okay? Listen, I got to hustle. I got to go make some stuff.
All right, Fari, go take care. Take care of your guys. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. All the best, guys.
David, you still here? We still have David, AV? I don't know if we do or we don't. We got people coming in and going here. We got, imagine AV will get David back.
I'm here.
Okay. I just said, were you there? And then I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I kept shouting, I'm here.
Well, AV is, working her, it's, having two people on the phone is the toughest thing you can do over there. And she's getting there. She's okay. Getting there.
That's we did rally 55 handles.
Yeah, I thought we did. That must be must be the Fari line. Well, I don't know if we still have David now. Anyway, I brought the numbers up here, and just where we are from last month, so people can, want to look at this is the A1 employment. This is the household survey, and again, I can't say enough, even though I say it too much probably. Be careful this unemployment number. And the number is really no good on anything. We're talking about out of 150, we got 157 million people that are working. All right, this is a civilian labor force, and we've got 257 people total. Okay, we got 155 million people working. And we've got 95 million that are not working. We don't know what the hell they're doing. And we got 6 million that allegedly are looking for a job. So maybe we still got some Lincoln going on here. So all we're doing on the unemployment number is trying to figure out how many of those 6 million people are either looking or not looking. And it's really kind of a, I don't know what game they're playing there, but it is somewhat of a game. And, so last month we got 300,000 less people in the last column where people are not looking and so they're not considered unemployed. We got 6 million people that are looking. And I think we got an issue with the phones, but David, are you back yet at some point? That number, we've got, let's just say there's 101 million people that are not working. Some are in disability, some are in school, and we single out 6 million and say those are, quote, unemployed. And that is the number we look at, which is somewhat crazed. Because if you take a different definition, that would be obviously somewhat different. But so let's look at this month. When we get those numbers back, we'll have Carl on as soon as we can and actually go through them, because he looks at the household survey unadjusted, which you can compare year over year. It's very difficult to do the month to month, especially with the August, December, January numbers are probably the worst. So the number today, we'll have to take a 3 or 4 month sample on it, because when you have people saying, the number is supposed to be 150 4 months in a row, and we get, two 250s and 250s, all you're really doing is averaging the thing out, and you're ending up at the same place. So you need to figure that one out. But now with this ADP number, not so good. I mean, people are really thinking that this month, we're probably going to have a bad number. I hope we don't, but we could. And I mean, with these people starting to lay people off, I think we probably might. So anyway, that's sort of where there is. Now, is the market going to, does the market just going to hang in there, but it doesn't matter because we're now going to have an extra Fed rate cut in here, which means we're going to continue that even though the economy might go down, the asset prices of stocks and other things will not. Then therein gives you though, is the market the same as the economy? And the answer, well, no, it's not. But can we keep the market up if the economy starts to drop? I don't know what's going on with the phone here, but we'll figure it out at some point, I hope. But that's where you are. Obviously, we're seeing asset prices of real estate in New York start to drop. I've read something here where it might be starting to drop here in the U.S. In Chicago. I don't know. I mean, the things that really kind of trouble you
is David on?
He is not.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Now you're back. Okay.
I've been cut off twice. I've been here the whole time.
Well, somehow or another, we cut you off twice, but now you're back. So
okay, I'm here.
I was the numbers I was looking at. Did you see the Chicago stuff yesterday, David? Where when Rahm Emanuel came out 4 years ago, the Rahm father, and said these pension numbers and everything are all screwed up, and we're going to have to bite the bullet, and we got to raise taxes, and we got to do something about them. Well, yesterday the Tribune sent me. Well, they sent them out to people, and it was in the paper, I'm sure. They said, would all that stuff, because maybe they didn't add it up right or maybe they didn't, with all the increase in taxes and all the pain, and some of this stuff is dramatic, and people had scattered on leases because they couldn't afford to stay there, the number now is actually worse than it was 4 years ago, even with the increase in taxes.
I didn't see the report, but, you know, it's like the federal deficit.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem no matter what you do, cut this, cut that. Oh, we'll do this social program, and the number ends up higher.
Well, it's not just a social program. We'll pay, you know, $14 billion for B-52 upgrades. Okay. I mean, there's got to be a reason why this Boeing is not, with these planes they're manufacturing day after day and just parking them. How much money do those people have, David? I mean, are they getting from other sources? I mean, I can't imagine how much that's costing them to continue to build 40 planes a month and not sell them.
I don't know the answer to that. I mean, but on the other hand, you know, we're in October. There's still indications that, you know, they will be in the sky by the end of the year, January, February at the latest. The orders, you know, I don't know that the orders have literally stopped. I mean, they were booked for 20 years ahead. And beyond that, you know, the increased tariffs on Airbus, you know, and not just us saying we're going to apply tariffs. The World Trade Organization said that, you know, underhanded subsidies by the EU to Airbus are illegal, and Boeing deserves an extra break. I'm not making a judgment, but that's what they said.
Okay, how do we get from them subsidizing Airbus, which everybody knows they do? How do we get from the spanking for that is for us to pay more for wine and brie cheese? What does that got to do with anything?
Come on, Chief, you're being way too logical.
Well, but you know, by the way, there's a follow up ruling coming from the WTO that's due in a couple of months. Regarding, are we essentially subsidizing Boeing? Which the answer there is yes. Duh. Now, okay, so both of these guys are getting subsidized. They both charge a gazillion dollars for planes. The companies are richer than God, and there's only two places you can buy them. And our airlines are paying up, I think, have overpaid for 50 years. Now, they're going to get to charge tariffs on our stuff that have nothing to do with airplanes as well. Where are we going with this? Is this about the dumbest thing you've ever heard, or what?
It is, and I'm hopeful that the answer to your question, where is this going, I hope it's to a table where they can sit down and negotiate something reasonable. But then again, maybe I'm being too logical.
Well, I absolutely do not understand the connection between them doing that and us, you know, having a tariff. It's not on autos yet, but it's on. It's on Scotch.
and by the way, I don't know if you saw the ruling, but the WTO ruling said, you know, tariffs on the on Airbus planes themselves, but the parts can come in tariff free.
Okay. I mean, well, so now we have. What have you just done? I mean, Delta likes the Airbus planes. Now they're going to be paying what, $100 million more a plane? 50?
I have no idea the amount.
Well, 10%. These things.
Yeah, if it's $500 million plane,
it's 50.
You know, it's $50 million.
Do we ever figure out if that's in the price? When you buy an Airbus plane, my question, I guess, is: do you buy it from Airbus USA or do you buy it from there? In other words, right now, if you buy an Apple phone, you're buying it from Apple, but they're essentially shipping it in from Apple China, or whatever you want to call it, to here, and then you my question is, do you pay the tariff on the transfer price amount or on the retail amount? I have no idea, do you?
I do not know. I think it's on the transfer price, not the retail, because, you know, based on quantity, whatever, there's discounts. And I don't know that you necessarily ever go to Airbus or Boeing per se. I think there's these, was it Aero Environment? There's actually some listed firms there.
David, we got the jobs up 136, so slightly below to 145. What do you say we head off the break and come back and go through all the numbers? We got the S&P's only down 4 now. They were just positive a second ago, but they're flying all over the place. Unemployment rate 3.7. The jobs number is 137. I don't know if that good or bad or whatever it is. We'll talk about it when we come back from break.
Your investments will make you wealthy. Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Coming up by Stocks and Jocks, Tom Tamale, Mr. David Andelman. She's AV on the board. SP Futures now up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 28. So we bounced up. We've got this number came in at, what are we? 130. But the, unemployment rate down to 3.5%, a 50-year low. Payrolls rise by 136. They revised last month to be up 30,000 more than they were. So, I guess that's probably part of the good news. Like I say, SP Futures now up 7. We've got the, I'm going to try and get some of the rest of these numbers. Private sector is up 114. The, I don't know if these numbers are good or bad. We'll take a look at the full A1 as soon as I get done with this, this thing over here. Over in Europe, we've got, DAX is up 9 points. That's 0.1%. FTSE up 25.4%. CAC around up 15.3%. Over in Asia, we've got the, Nikkei is up 68.3%. Hang Seng's down 289. That's 1.1%. Bonds, we'll see what the bonds are moving here. We've got the, everybody's machines are slow because stuff is flying all over the place. Bonds are pretty much unchanged. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Boy, I dig through more of these numbers.
Good morning. Happy Friday, everyone. It is cloudy day in Chicago, 50 degrees currently. High humidity, no rain expected. Highest will be 58 and the lowest 51. And 71 degrees currently in Phoenix. Sunny and clear sky this Friday with the highest 95 and lowest 69. Still no accidents reported, and but traffic getting a volume, especially in Stevenson Expressway, northbound from Central to I-94, as well as a 94 west from I-55 to West Monroe. Eisenhower is tied up both ways, starting at Wedgewood Drive all the way to downtown. 90 East is heavy on traffic as well from Harlem to downtown, so be ready for some delays up to 10 to 15 minutes. Chief?
So, David, what do you make of these?
Well, first, before just finishing the previous thought, I don't know that airplanes are actually bought from Airbus directly. I don't know the EU thing. But from Boeing, I think the majority of them are leased through Air Lease, symbol AL. Don't hold any positions, full disclosure. They get the quantities from Boeing, and they write the leases to, you know, whoever it is, United, American, you know, whatever. I think the majority of them are bought that way. As far as the numbers, you know, it is a mixed bag. You know, the private number was low, 114. The other one came in, the headline number came in slightly below, but the July and August revisions were higher. I think there's just this, the way the market looked yesterday, I think, you know, you broke from top to bottom, Dow, around 1,200 points in 2 days and an early morning, break. And I think that was at least technically enough. And the services number, while disappointing, was still somewhat positive. It looked to me like at least short term, the bad news was already discounted by the 5-6% break in price. So, you know, I wanted to load up, I didn't, but I did, you know, take off some, covered calls, just unwound and left the positions naked. So I was slightly long going into the rally, so that was good news. And I just think, you know, the market's going to say, hey, there's an accommodative Fed, you know, bad news might be looked at as good news because it keeps the Fed in the game. We got talks on trade, you know, a week from today. And you really want to be short going into that, even if it's unlikely that, you know, we're going to get any real deal. You know, at this point with the slowing worldwide, maybe both sides will put in, you know, a half-hearted deal or a skeleton of a deal, you know, and try and get something real by the end of the year. At this point, really, on breaks, I want to be a little bit of a buyer.
We did seem to go down fairly rapidly, obviously those 2-3 days. And yesterday, how many times, David, has been the morning of the third day when you just got to hold your nose and buy. I mean, it's the same
thing. Exactly. And I wanted to, but being like I said, I took off some short calls, but that's as long as I was willing to get.
Well, yeah, and I don't. I think that the idea that we're just going to, there's two things going on, even though the conversations you hear from people on most of the financial talk shows are, they're blending them together. Although I'm starting to see some people, I was watching the Fast Money last night and a few other things, and there's a couple guys that are shall we say, coming around to my way of thinking. It doesn't make them right, it's just coming around to my way of thinking. The one guy was, when you start talking about people being laid off and you start talking about slowing economies and business cycle stuff, and you start, he goes, the idea of the Fed going from, you know, 1.75 to 1.5 doesn't make any difference whatsoever. There's no problem with anybody getting money. There's no problem with liquidity. It doesn't do anything any good to anybody. But the other side of the coin is, does throwing some more money at the system make the stock market behave differently than the rest of the economy? In other words, can it hold up while the rest of the stuff doesn't? The answer to that might be yes. I mean, clearly,
right.
That's what Japan and Germany and everybody else have been banking on, and they're to the point where they're buying stocks. At least Japan is. I mean, so now will we get to that stage? You know, I don't necessarily know. I mean, but I sort of hope not.
No, I agree with you in all those principles, and you're right, you know, lowering it from 1.5 to 1.25, even 1%, is not going to make, you know, Boeing, if they're still grounded, you know, buy more parts and buy more planes. It's not going to happen, nor anyone else, Honeywell or any, you know, the industrially oriented companies. That said, you know, money finds a way to find yield. It just finds a place to find it, or if it doesn't, you know, it's going to park itself somewhere, gold, Bitcoin, somewhere, if it needs, quote-unquote, and I use the term liberally, safety. So it's going to find yield. And when, you know, you take earnings yield, which is just the inverse of the P.E., and let's just say it's 17, and you take 1/17, it's almost 6%. And then you look at, you know, what an index, whether it's S&P or Dow, and, you know, the dividend of the index is roughly 2%, and you compare an earnings yield of 6% on the market and a 2%, you know, dividend yield roughly, and then you look at a 10-year and it's 1.5, all of a sudden, regardless of trade issues or slowing growth or whatever, as long as there's some growth and it's not contraction, impeachment, this, Elizabeth Warren, whatever, you know, I mean, there's plenty of headwinds. I'm not trying to make for a real bullish case. I'm not. There's plenty of headwinds. But then just a earnings comparison, yield comparison, all of a sudden the stock market looks attractive.
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. And I caution constantly is that a lot of economic principles and a lot of these formulas that we talk about that or what you're saying, you're giving the layman's version of the formula. Basically, if something is returning 3%, you know, it's worth X, okay? But if the risk-free rate is zero, and you got a place that's working that's returning 10%. What, it's not worth infinite, David. That's the problem. We're at the edges here, and that's why the reason why I'm so nervous here, and I've mentioned this before, is because I went through this, and so did you, in the early '80s, the other way, right? I mean,
right? No question.
I mean,
In
those days, you could get. I'm going to say General Motors, GE, those kinds of places. You got the stock got the crap beat out of them enough to where they were still paying a dividend, but I'm going to guess the dividend rate was 8 at least.
You're right.
But your CD was paying 14, 13, 12.
Right, exactly.
So you'd sit there and say, well, why would anybody take any kind of risk to get 8 when you can get 12, 13, 14 without risk. But the problem was, David, it's so far at the edge, it can't go any further that way. I mean, or it probably could have gone to, you know, 14 and a half. But, I mean, you had this feeling that at some point, these companies that were somehow still making money, as horrible as the economy was, that someday you wanted to pull the money from the 14 and put it at the 8, because the 8 now, as the other stuff starts to come down, the price on the 8 is going to start going up, because that price can move up and your CD can't move up, right? So at the edge, you saw weird stuff like that. Why, God, why is somebody dumb enough to buy General Motors playing 8 when I can walk down to the savings loan and get 12? Well, because...
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, to interrupt. David Parks asking a question.
Okay. What's the question?
He's asking David to give his level to watch for gold and silver.
There you go, David.
Give the level for what?
Gold and silver.
Gold and silver. Okay.
We got gold hovering over silver 15.
I'll still use the October, even though the front month is now December. Upside is 15.3536, big time resistance. You get over that, you should test around 15.60. And downside, we held the break pretty well. It looked like it was a head and shoulders breakout. Didn't happen, went down to 14.58. There was an old cycle high at 14.60, so we penetrated by a little bit. But 14.58 to 60 is big time support, and 15.35 to 36 is big time resistance. I'll use silver. I'll use the December as the front month. Last break, 16.94, and then there were a bunch, three old bottoms at 17, 16.97 to 17, so 16.94 to 17. Big time support, looks like a buy down there, and upside 1875 to 1878 looks like huge resistance.
Okay, so I don't know where do you place the fear thing here? I mean, we were under 1300 forever in the gold, and then we spiked up, and now we've got this other kind of range here, David. What, we're like 1490? I mean.
I was thinking about it this morning when I was on the treadmill. I was like, you know what? I mean, I guess it's a fear gauge. I guess the low rates make it easy to, store and cheaper to store, possibly even lower insurance costs. But on the other hand, if everything's really, really slowing and the dollar is strong to your eyes, I'm not sure I can make a real fundamental argument for gold. I mean, I'm not necessarily bearish, and I respect the fact that it looked like a major breakout to the downside, and it came back and negated that. I respect that, but I could just maybe see a trading range between about 1450 and 1535.
All right, I'm going to ask you a Milton Friedman question.
Okay.
As we talk about on the show, and one of the hardest things I think for most people, if you're not in, a business where you're constantly moving money back and forth overseas, and you're not doing currency transactions, it's very difficult for somebody to think. I'll use the term three dimensionally. That every time, every time you move, it's in relation to something else. But in fact, the dollar in your pocket is not steady. I mean, in relation to the pound, in relation to the euro, in relation to the yen, it's constantly moving. I mean, you don't necessarily, when you walk into the Tripoli Tap and order a beer and it's, whatever it is, $4, you don't sit there and say, well, today my dollar just got its ass beat, so if I was over in London, I'd have to pay 25 cents more for the beer if I used the dollar. I mean, you don't think that way. But when you look at gold, it's really in relation to other stuff, right? I mean, there could be a day where gold goes down here, $20. Yet, if you were in yen, the gold might be going up for you, correct? And but people don't necessarily think that way. But I look at the money supply numbers that these guys are pounding out now, and we're talking 8.7% in the last 3 months at the annual rate. For whatever stupid reason, okay? Obviously because they're getting intimidated by the president and they want to keep asset prices up. Well, if we're gonna have 8.7% new dollars every year, what how much more gold do we get every year? 0.1%? At some point, there's no way that in relation to the dollar, gold can't go up. I mean, it because if those are the two only two products. Now, if the dollar, if we throw so many dollars out there, that the dollar drops like a stone compared to, say, the pound, but they got their own problems, then maybe gold won't go up in relation to the, to a pound. But in relation to the dollar, if we're going to continue with this craziness of 8.5 to 9% per year, even though a lot of it is sucked out of circulation at night because banks aren't using it, I get that part, and it becomes M0 when it goes back to the Fed. Still, David, it's versus one versus the other. One's got to move, I think.
Right. No, I get what you're saying, but you know, you had one important word in there, and that was if.
Well, if, I mean, these guys don't look like they're going down.
If the Fed continues to pound money into the system, and then you have to consider time frame. Over what time frame does that macroeconomic, you know, mechanism really take effect? And it becomes literally a supply and demand thing too. And I'm not just talking about people buying, you know, gold bracelets or gold rings. You know, it has to do with, you know, governments. Are they going to store? Are they going to sell? They haven't seen 1500, you know, 1530 in gold for a while. You know, they bought some, you know, cheap. Are they going to sell out? I mean, there's a bunch of questions. And again, over the longer term, the macro, you know, things that you've cited, I think are correct. And it will have that, you know, effect eventually. But, you know, for the trading time window that most folks have, or even institutions or hedge funds, you know, when is that? And in between, do we go to 1450 first or do we go to 1550
first? Well, no, I'm saying it's not, or what I'm trying to interject into the conversation, and I'm not saying buy or sell. I'm absolutely not doing that. Because I have a lot of people that are in the gold miners, but I've got puts there too, so I'm not saying it's going up today. But my point is when you start talking about gold in terms of something, which in the Midwest, in the U.S. pretty much everywhere, certainly in Chicago, without even knowing it, you're saying gold versus the dollar.
Right.
What I'm trying to say is the dollar is not a constant. The dollar is a shifting sand. Gold is more the constant in this situation.
Right.
So if you double the amount of dollars, okay, which we're kind of, you know, which maybe we do, maybe we don't. I mean, who knows where the Fed's going to go. But if you do, I mean, the price of gold, the value might not go up, okay, but the versus like gasoline. But in terms of the dollar, you're moving the other side. You're not moving the, and this is not.
No, I agree with you, and yet these, you know, monthly additions or whatever have been in place for a while. And you would think that, you know, oversupply, dollars should be dropping versus the basket of currencies. And it isn't. It's going up.
Well, it's because the other knuckleheads are doing even more. That's what I'm saying. It's a very relative base at this point.
Right.
I mean,
which
I think most people, I know I'm not used to seeing that. I mean, if every country decided to, you know, increase their monetary base or their money supply by essentially a little more, like you should, a little more than your GDP is growing, we wouldn't have these swings like this. I mean, I'm looking
right
at our money supply now. This is M2 is where we at? We're $15 trillion.
Wow.
In 2000, it was not quite five.
Crazy.
Right. So in 20 years, in 19 years, it's tripled. All right. So I'm going to say the GDP is not tripled in 19 years.
No.
Okay. So there's an inflationary bias into the amount of dollars that are out there. Now again, we keep having stuff going to the Fed at night. I keep saying that. People probably don't understand what I'm talking about. Because a lot of the money that they've pushed out in the banks comes right back at them at night. Right, so it's not really in
right.
the system. So we're complicating all this stuff. I mean, that's why I started the show today, David, talking about this Republican senator from Pennsylvania, and he's spouting the Trump party line, which you know, if you or I were in office, we would accentuate the good statistics as well. So I'm not saying we're saints and they're idiots. I mean, but I think, David, some of these numbers have gotten so far askew over periods of time that you almost, if you don't qualify virtually every single one of them, you're lying, even though you're not lying. I mean, if you were to say...
I agree, and we've talked about the reliability of, you know, Census Bureau taking, you know, and Bureau of Labor Statistics, whatever, and the accuracy and the seasonal factors. We've talked about that for years.
Well, yeah.
But now those are the only numbers that markets have to go on and the only numbers that Fed has to go on.
Well, but it's reaching a point where you start talking about how good people are doing. This guy was talking about yesterday. Look at the advances we made since Trump has been president in the amount of increases in wages. And I'm going to say, David, that a lot of those increases have come on the lower end, and a real lot of those were really because of minimum wage increases that most of these guys opposed. Okay, and I'm not.
No question.
And again,
I don't take political standpoints, but I think the Democrats forced a lot of that through, and that's why the president or those that are touting, you know, the president's agenda are benefiting from stuff, like you said, that they generally oppose.
Well, but that still is not really my... What I'm saying is if you look at the... I'll do real quick. I'll say this again. The median income, the way I see it, is around 36 grand. All right? And it's higher than it's on this page. I think these guys are low. They've got the median income at 33, and in 2000 they got it at 30. So basically it's up 10%. Well, they have the price of automobiles up 70%, and they got the price of a median house damn near doubling. So if you were to drop this guy making 36 grand, a 2% increase, well, and the cost of healthcare, the cost of a car, the cost of a house goes up 0.1%, he's still behind because he's been behind so long that the numbers, it's like a stock drop.
How about education, property tax?
Yeah, well, it's like a stock, you know, a stock will drop from 100 to 5, and all of a sudden some buffoon on TV will say, hey, the stock's up 10% today. And you and I look at it and go, it's up from 5 to 5.5. It was 100 a week ago. I mean, what are we talking about here? What's the difference, right? I mean, you know, so I mean, whenever numbers get this screwed up like this over a long period of time, you almost have to be very careful when you even use them, even though they are, quote, the right numbers.
I mean, right? No, I get it.
I can't believe the number this week, David. I only have a few seconds. Is that the cost of insuring somebody at work, healthcare and stuff, has now just reached $20,000? And if you look at the out-of-pocket costs for the person getting that insurance, meaning the little contribution they have to make or any kind of deductible, just increases in that have more than increased, is gone higher than their increase in salary in the last 10 years. You look at those two statistics and you go, how's anybody getting anywhere?
Right. No, I get it.
So what are your prediction? We're up 9. We stay up here or we fold on these numbers? These numbers were just kind of where everybody wanted.
I think, both. I mean, I 2850, I think you buy the S&P or equivalent, and you know, I would wait to sell it, you know, 3009 to 3030.
Is the Russell ever going to move, or is it just dead?
It's both ways. It's just portfolio switching, more a function of interest rates than anything.
It might move, but it might be dead. There is a what is
no, no, no. What I'm saying is, if interest rates, if yields go up, the Russell's going to go up. If yields go down, the Russell's going to go down.
I would agree.
Because of the banking influence, the regional banking influence.
Just the opposite of what you would expect, which is what we've been seeing for a while now. David, thank you very much, buddy. Have a good weekend. S&P futures up 850, NASDAQ futures up 31. Be back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed.
back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.